It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
NFL fans, what is up? Kevin Smith with you here at the call sheet for episode 53, and we have arrived at the NFL draft. This episode is dropping a day early on a Wednesday because it normally runs on Thursday. But hey, as we all know, that's round one. Round one of the 2024 NFL draft kicks off Thursday night. It feels like we've been building towards this for a long time, and now we get to do it for real. Can't wait. Really an exciting event. What a job the NFL does in marketing the draft. I read recently that last year's round one drew over 11 million viewers, which was more than twice the number who tuned in for last weekend's opening playoff games in the NBA. So you're drawing twice as many viewers to the draft as you are for the NBA playoffs. That's remarkable. What a job by the NFL in marketing a non-sporting event. And I'm about as big a draft geek as it gets. So today's show is all about the draft. And in part two, I'm going to have Big G Sean Gurley back on the show. He was here about a month ago to get our draft discussion started. And we're going to finish up with Sean in part two. But as I always do, part one, real quick, we're going to do this quickly today. A shout out to the players who wore the number of the episode. It's episode 53. And I'm going to kind of do a roll call of some of the best guys ever to wear 53. Linebackers and offensive linemen predominantly. You go to the linebacker crew, Harry Carson, the Hall of Fame backer from the Giants, Randy Gradishar, Denver Broncos, that orange crush defense from the 1970s. I remember them as a little kid, Randy Gradishar, one of the first linebackers I was ever familiar with. More modernly in the 90s, Bill Romanowski, Broncos and 49ers. I'll never forgive Bill Romanowski for balling out against the Steelers in the 1997 AFC Championship game. And then Eagle and Jet standout linebacker Hugh Douglas, a great number 53. Guy who's done a ton of charity work and a lot of work for the community in the greater New York, New Jersey area in his post-career. Shout out to Hugh Douglas. And then obviously you have some great offensive linemen. Steelers center Marquise Pouncey, Dallas longtime center Mark Stepnoski. Quick Mark Stepnoski story. My best friend from high school went and played at the University of Pittsburgh, was an offensive lineman at Pitt. When Mark Stepnoski was there, I remember going out to see him, visiting him out at school for one of their last games of the season. And we were in the weight room, and Mark Stepnoski was in the weight room doing seated behind the neck presses with 315 pounds. That might not mean a lot to some of you who are listening, but if you've ever been in a weight room and you are familiar with the seated behind the neck press, which honestly, that's an exercise a lot of people have moved on from because of the stress it puts on the shoulder. A lot of people frowning now on that exercise. But hey, 30 years ago, you didn't know much better. And the fact that Mark Stepnoski was behind the neck pressing 315 pounds from a seated position was mind-boggling, and still remains one of the coolest things I've ever seen in a weight room. Fellow Pitt alumnus Jim Sweeney, a great number 53, Kevin Glover, and then Jeff Bostic, member of the famed Hogs unit of the Washington Redskins in the 1980s, and one of the best offensive lines in football history. Some great guys that have worn the number 53. But we're going to spend a little less time on that today because there's so much to get to with the draft. And what I'm going to do here in part one is we're going to revisit last year's top 10, the top 10 picks from last year, and take a look at how their rookie seasons played out. And then I'm going to do something I don't normally do because I'm bad at it, but I'm going to make some predictions. I'm going to try to predict the top 10 this year and see how many of those picks I can nail. I'm going to guess that the percentage is going to be low, you know, like maybe in the range of a middle infielder, you know, in Major League Baseball. If I get two to three of them right, that should be good. I mean, you could probably actually, I'll give myself a little more credit. I think you could probably nail four or five. Let's shoot for half. Let's see if I can get half right. So let's revisit last year's top 10 first and then make some predictions on this year's top 10. So last year, as we know, top of the draft, number one overall pick, Bryce Young, quarterback Alabama, going to the Carolina Panthers, struggled with his rookie in his rookie season. And it'll be very interesting to see what becomes of Bryce Young going forward. He gets a new coaching staff, a new offensive coordinator in Carolina. They've brought in some offensive weapons, big trade for Deontay Johnson. That should help Bryce Young out. So he's a guy, obviously, that under the old regime really was not put in much of a position to succeed, had some struggles on his own. A lot of questions about if he's just big enough. You know, is Bryce Young physically big enough to be able to stand in an NFL pocket? And so we're going to have to see going forward how he does with the new regime in Carolina. Number two overall pick did not have any of such problems. C.J. Stroud from Ohio State with the Houston Texans, offensive rookie of the year, NFL rookie of the year, phenomenal rookie season. Really a tale of two players between Young and Stroud. Stroud really lands in the right system with D'Amico Ryans in Houston and offensive coordinator Bobby Slowik coming over from the 49ers and really giving him a great infrastructure, a better than expected receiving core in Houston, but a good offensive line. And they did some smart stuff like moving the pocket and using max protections. And running a lot of bootleg and play action stuff really to keep the rush out of Stroud's face and let him diagnose coverage. And Stroud, of course, who showed in college, I think back to the 2022 Peach Bowl game where he just tore up a vaunted Georgia defense. And you could see that he had that it quality, and he certainly showed out in Houston his rookie year. And his trajectory looks like it's going to put him among the best in the game for a long time. And then Houston got to pick again at number three, and they knocked it out of the park again with Will Anderson, the edge rusher out of Alabama. He became the defensive rookie of the year. So phenomenal 1-2 or 2-3, if we're being literal, picks there in Houston. And they've really set themselves up for some success. And the Texans are going all in, man. Their offseason moves, they spent a lot of money and brought a lot of talent to Houston. They will be an interesting team to watch. At number four, Anthony Richardson went to the Colts, quarterback out of Florida. He gets a bit of an incomplete for his rookie year simply because an injury derailed him. And the Colts are going to have to find ways really for him to take less hits. He took a lot of hits, whether on design runs or scrambles, or yeah, their pass protection schemes, et cetera. So they'll have to find a way to better protect Anthony Richardson there and Shane Steichen's scheme. Number five, Devin Weatherspoon, who was my favorite corner in last year's draft. He went to Seattle. I really was hoping the Steelers could land him. They got nowhere near being able to do so. He went all the way up at number five, had a great rookie season, 79 tackles. He actually had three sacks from the cornerback position. Only one interception, but he made it count. It was a 97-yard pick six. And so Devin Witherspoon is going to be a fixture there at corner for a long time in the Pacific Northwest. Number six overall pick, Paris Johnson Jr., offensive tackle out of Ohio State, went to the Arizona Cardinals. Solid rookie season for him as he played over 1,100 snaps. That was the eighth most in the NFL for an offensive lineman. Gave up some sacks, but when you play that many snaps as a rookie, yeah, that's going to happen. And certainly Paris Johnson looked like he belongs, looked the part last year for Arizona. Should be a fixture for that line for a while. Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher out of Texas Tech, went to Las Vegas at number seven. I mean, he kind of had an up and down rookie year. Didn't get a ton of reps early on. Only wound up with 3.5 sacks. But now that Vegas has really bolstered that offensive line, bringing in Christian Wilkins, he gets a little more familiar with the scheme, gets to work opposite of Max Crosby. Great opportunity for Wilson to make a big jump in his second year. Eight overall, Bijan Robinson, running back out of Texas, goes to the Atlanta Falcons, finishes with 970 yards rushing, just short of 1,000, a couple hundred more yards receiving. And he was splitting time with Tyler Algier, in the backfield there in Atlanta. Some people felt like Arthur Smith maybe didn't use him enough or to his full capability. Maybe that's a reason why Arthur Smith is gone. But Robinson obviously showed great explosiveness, tremendous dual threat guy out of the backfield, catching the ball, running. He should be a fixture in Atlanta for years to come. At number nine, Jalen Carter, the massive offense or defensive tackle out of Georgia, went to the Eagles, started strong. Jalen Carter's rookie season kind of mirrored Philadelphia's season. Philly gets out to that great 10-1 start. Jalen Carter looked like an absolute monster early on, but then some injuries and maybe some conditioning issues, some questions about his conditioning kind of popped up. And as Philly faltered down the stretch, so did Jalen Carter. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of shape he comes back in for the 2024 season. The Eagles are certainly going to need him to play out. And then number 10 pick, Darnell Wright, big tackle out of Tennessee, went to the Chicago Bears. And another guy like Paris Johnson Jr., who played over 1,100 snaps and, you know, did a really solid job there for a Bears team that obviously struggled. So, you know, again, expect Wright to be a fixture in Chicago. They've made some serious upgrades, and they're expected to land Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick in this year's draft. And so that's your top 10 overall. Really solid rookie year for the top 10 as a whole. You know, a couple guys who struggled, a couple guys who maybe get an incomplete, but with guys like Stroud and Anderson and Witherspoon, the two big tackles, Johnson and Wright, Robinson, all those guys, really solid rookie season. So it looks like it was maybe a promising top 10 from last year's draft. All right, so now quickly, because I want to get to my man Big G, I'm going to make some predictions for this year's top 10. All right, I won't take a whole lot of time to do this, but let's run through the top 10 real fast and see if I can nail the teams with the player that they desire. All right, so let's go. Let's take a shot. All right, so here we go. Top of the draft, Chicago Bears. They're taking Caleb Williams. I think everybody knows that. Number two, I think the draft pivots at number two, and the Washington Commanders surprise people, and they take J.J. McCarthy. And number three, I think New England stays quarterback and takes Drake May. And then here we see the draft get really crazy. I think Vegas trades all the way up to number four. Arizona has sort of talked about, you know, that pick being up for grabs. I think Vegas sends them a bunch of picks to move up to number four, and they take Jaden Daniels, the quarterback out of LSU. I think that allows then the Chargers, who want a wide receiver, to take Marvin Harrison Jr. I think then Malik Nabers from LSU, the stud receiver, falls to the Giants at six. Joe Alt in Tennessee, that feels like a marriage, man. That feels like a done deal. So I'll peg Alt to the Titans. I think Atlanta's pretty sold on an edge rusher. Dallas Turner from Bama, I've got him going to Atlanta. I don't know if, you know, some of the other players falling a little bit changes that, but I don't believe so. I think the Bears then are going to be able to get a wide receiver, get a guy that they want. I got them taking Rome Odunze. And at number 10, I think the New York Jets have a great marriage there with Brock Bowers. I think the Minnesota Vikings will try very hard to get up into the top 10 to acquire Daniels, but they might get shut out here. I think the Raiders really want Daniels and are going to make an aggressive move. Maybe Minnesota will do that instead. And or maybe Minnesota will sit at 11 and take Michael Penix. I don't know, man. But it's going to be a really interesting draft. As soon as Chicago takes Williams, you know, all heck might break loose. All right, so let's, for the record, let's put this down on record. Here's my top 10. Here's my predictions. Caleb Williams to Chicago. J.J. McCarthy to Washington. Drake May to New England. The Raiders trade all the way up to number four to get Jaden Daniels. Chargers take Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers to the Giants, Joe Alt to Tennessee, Dallas Turner to Atlanta, Rome Odunze to Chicago, and then Brock Bowers to the New York Jets. All right, those are my predictions. You know, don't hold me to that, but we'll see, man. If I get 50%, I'll be thrilled. 50% I'll be thrilled. You know, 30%, hey, in the major leagues, you're hitting 300, you're an all-star. So let's see. Okay, all right. We're going to take a break. On the other side, my man Big G, Sean Gurley, going to come back and join us, and we're going to really dive deep into the draft. Can't wait to talk to Sean. Come on back, everybody. All right, welcome back to the Call Sheet. Kevin Smith back with you. And I am pleased to have as a return guest, Big G Sean Gurley, who was here about a month ago when we actually started to really dive into our draft talk. And I told Sean I wanted to have him back to finish our conversation. And here he is. Sean, how you doing?
Hey, Coach, how are you doing, man? Great to be back on the Call Sheet with KT Smith, man. And I'm ready to get it in because this team might have some change for the NFL draft, man. So I'm all about it. Let's go. Let's do what we do.
It sure is. It sure is. T-minus and some change. Hey, tell me about this, man. The last time we were here, you said that you felt that Joe Alt and Brock Bowers were the most pro-ready guys in the draft. You still feel that way, or have you changed at all?
No, I still feel that way. I think that in a year that didn't have a serious quarterback banter, you know, with concerns with teams, even teams that's picking outside of the top three, like the Denver Broncos, the Los Angeles Raiders, the Minnesota Vikings. In any other year, Joe Alt would be the guy because you have to have the guy to protect the guy. So Joe Alt, and this is my opinion. I love Paris Johnson. I think he was a pro-ready day one starter for the Arizona Cardinals. Joe Alt is one step above Paris. Joe Alt's going to wear a yellow jacket as long as he stays healthy. And, you know, he reminds me a lot of Joe Thomas, the starting tackle for the Cleveland Browns for all those years. And, you know, I hate talking about the Browns on the Steelers podcast channel, but he's really that guy, man. I've watched him in all 22 film and Patreon. So, yeah. And then Brock Bowers, I've caught a lot of flack about Brock Bowers being a pro-ready guy. But based on today's NFL climate, Brock Bowers is the perfect weapon. He's basically Travis Kelce, George Kittle, but faster and more athletic. I mean, this guy runs a sub-4.4. And I think in any pro system, if you go back and put on the tape, not only does he inline block, because you can bring him down and, you know, just not have him as a stretch, like it looks, the symbols of wide receiver in a slot, but you can bring him down, man, and watch him on crackback blocks. You know, he takes the guy out of the system. It's not like Georgia fell off when Mount Washington went to Pittsburgh. Go back and watch Bowers' tape, man. Ready to go. Day one starter. Better going to be better in the pros than Sam LaPorta as a rookie. You know, I just think it's the system and the scheme. And I look for, if he drops maybe past 8 or 10, some teams start saying, look, man, we got to go up. We got to go get him because he's ready to go on day one. So, yeah, I'm sticking to it for sure, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine he falls past the Jets at 10, but you never know. Mm-hmm. You never know. You get that quarterback run and everybody starts trading up and some of the best players get pushed down and, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But let me ask you this, right? I wanted to just kind of pick up with that because you brought up Bowers. I hadn't paid a ton of attention to him. And in the month since, you know, you and I last talked, I've really looked at him a lot. And I agree with you very much. So it's funny watching college D-backs choose not to tackle him in the open field, you know, making business decisions about
about
that. So but tell me about this, man. Why do you think the draft, I was talking about this with Jeff Hartman a little bit on our whip around show. Why do you think the draft has become so sensational, so spectacular, such a success? It more than double, it drew last year's round one, drew more than double the opening day audience for the NBA playoffs this past weekend. I mean, the draft is almost like a national event now. Why do you think it's so successful?
Well, I mean, it's big brand, big box NFL. You know, NFL's king, you know, whether people want to realize it or not, and it's must-see TV. But what it does is it creates excitement and hope to all the NFL teams that really doesn't stand a chance. Hmm. I mean, there's going to be teams out there that, you know, watch the little packs of people that sit together in Detroit, and you're going to have this section, it's the Steelers over here, this section is the Bengals, this section is the Green Bay Packers, this section is the Dallas Cowboys, and they give hope based on what they're able to get. And then the hype that they build up for the players is even more so because the guy, and this has to do with the college game, the college kids are more pro-ready than ever because a lot of those big-time programs are very similar to NFL programs. And now you're seeing the college game transition more into the NFL game. So when they get a kid, like when Marvin Harrison Jr.'s name is announced, whatever team he goes to, the fan base is going to lose control because they're going to be like, this kid is going to be the program savior and going to turn the tides for us because, you know, those top 10 picks, most of those teams aren't good. There's a reason they're there. but they're going to believe that the guy that they draft, oh, this is the guy that's going to take us to a Super Bowl or a playoff run and all whatever else. So that's why it builds up, because it gives some of those teams that are not actually good and not competing for a Super Bowl hope to go to the next level and get an opportunity to pull it, you know, to win a playoff game or even win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you know, that's what I think, you know.
Sean, you ever see the movie The Shawshank Redemption?
Absolutely. Millions of times.
One of my favorites, right? Andy Dufresne, hope is a good thing.
Y'all absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I said the same thing to Jeff when we were talking about the whip around show. Just the hope and the intrigue. And then the NFL does a great job bringing in different various groups of people, whether it's veterans or whether it's special needs kids or whomever it might be, to sort of get communities involved. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing the NFL really gets right. So yes, all right, let's talk big picture though, right? The transition from college to the pros, it's obviously a huge jump on the field, but it's more than that. There are other challenges that these young men face. So what do you think are the big keys to success for handling the challenges that these guys are going to face on and off the field?
Well, you know, like I prefaced earlier, I think now more than ever, the collegiate kids are ready to go to the pros based on the money that they receive on the collegiate level. I mean, NIL is a real thing. You got kid like Caleb Williams cleared $6 million from NIL in his last year at USC. So it's not about the money and all what else. The issue, what I think that they'll struggle with, so I'll pick out an area they struggle and an area they'll exceed. The issue they'll struggle with will be the professionalism of the NFL. I had an opportunity. I never played a down in the NFL, but my godbrother played, the late William White for Ohio State University. Man, that's my godbrother, man. And I grew up in his house, you know, grew up around him and seeing him and Chris Carter and Terry Carter and Keith Byers. I saw those guys growing up as a kid. And when they were locked in as far as professionals, I'll never forget one time I went to William's house in Detroit. His mom and dad took me up to see the Bears play the Minnesota Vikings. And we got there, and like it was the day before the game. And Will was sitting in a room, locked in a film room with a screen. And he just was hitting a clicker back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And he didn't want anybody to disturb me. So I stood there and like watched him for like 40 minutes. You know, and he's clicking back and forth. And he just turned around and glanced at me. He said, "What's going on, Sean?" And I said, "Man, I just can't believe you're doing this." He said, "This is how I win, because the great ones study." And see, a lot of those young guys aren't used to that regimen, because from an athletic standpoint or talent ability, they're all the same or equal or even better. So they have to hit the grind, get their rest, take care of their body, film study like you've never seen before. And at the collegiate level, you might have to do it, but a lot of times you don't have to, because the coaches is doing so much prep. There's GAs, there's all this other stuff. But in the NFL, it's your money, your time, your effort, your energy that's going to pay off for you to get on the field and do what you do. So I think that's where they'll struggle. Now, the area that they'll transition good in my opinion, is that a lot of these collegiate programs, their sets and their style and play calling is very similar now. You've seen teams like USC, teams like Oklahoma, teams like Ohio State, teams like Georgia have pro-ready sets and schemes. So when they move from the collegiate level to the pros, the only thing that really changes is the language. You know, you might call this play this way, but it's really the same play that you've been running in college. And so because of that, you see a more pro-ready offenses, and the offenses in the collegiate level and the pro level mirror themselves. That's how you're seeing guys jump to the pros and be very successful right away, because their schemes and sets are the same. But the grind is different, man. The grind is completely different.
The discipline is incredible. I had a great opportunity this past year to coach with Paul Gunther, who was the former OC in Cincinnati and with the Raiders. He took a job with the Cowboys now. He's out in Dallas, and he gave me a copy of the defensive playbook for the Raiders in 2019. I brought it home. It was sitting on our counter. My wife started paging through it. First of all, it was, you know, twice as thick as any phone book you've ever seen. Yeah. And it was just the OTA install. It wasn't even like, you know, game plan stuff. It was just OTA install. And she's looking through that. And her one comment was this. Her comment was, you know, people say football players are dumb. I dare anybody to page through this and tell me that football players are dumb. And it's incredible. Just, again, the terminology, like you're saying, and the adjustment. And, yeah, I mean, you talk different languages. I remember talking to an OC one time, and he's talking about the China route, China. I'm like, what the hell is it? What are you talking about? What's the China route? And he's like, you know, corner hitch. And I was like, oh, smash. We're talking about smash. Yeah. You know, you all the time you get that crossover. And right, guys got to digest it. They got to work. If you're not willing to work, man, the guy that works is the guy that wins.
Yeah,
that's a great point, man, about that, about the transition. Well, you mentioned Caleb Williams, man. Let's kind of segue to some of the guys in this year's draft. Yeah, I think it's pretty much a done deal. He's going number one overall to the Bears. What are your thoughts on that? Are you sold on Caleb Williams? What do you see as his projection in the NFL?
So I was on another podcast earlier this week, and I made this statement. I said that go back and look at the draft class of 2021. What were the NFL GMs sold on? They wanted the next Pat Mahomes. Oh, by the way, all 2021 quarterbacks have been traded except for Trevor Lawrence. And I think Trevor Lawrence has got a year or two to show what he can do, or it's adios muchachos for him as well. So the issue is you got to pick a quarterback that not necessarily fits your system, but has to be able to transition from college to pro. Caleb has a high ceiling, but Caleb's got a high bust on him too, because you can't play the way you played at college in the NFL. It's not going to happen. Him scrambling, running all around. He's got to be able to sit in the pocket, digest a scheme, and deliver the football. You know, we're still in France. So we know that high and fast, Danny Marino, get the ball out, get rid of it. That's what we know. That's been working in the NFL since the 80s. I don't know if running around and all the magic that Patty Mahomes does is going to work. So can he do that? Oh, absolutely, because he's got the arm. He's a little small. He's not 6'2" quite. He's not quite 215 pounds, but he's got the arm, so he can. But let's see what the coaching staff and coaching style does for him in Chicago, because he got bust on him. Don't get me wrong. He's not just that, you know, because people are saying the best quarterback since Andrew Luck. No, he's not. He's good. He's a very good college quarterback. But let's see what he does at the next level. So that's what I'm interested to see, because I know the Bears fans are going to be kicking themselves in the teeth if he pans out and he's not any good and you got rid of Justin. That's, oh my goodness, that's going to be one of those things, man, that they'll never stop talking about.
Right. And you mentioned it's on the coaching staff. I mean, Chicago's track record of developing quarterbacks is certainly not stellar. So, you know, it's one thing to have the ability. It's another for it to translate, and it's another yet again for you to land in a spot where they help you develop and aren't you know, a hindrance to you. I think sometimes in the NFL, coaches forget that it's not what you know that matters. It's what you can get your players to execute at a high level. Yeah. And so, you know, we'll see if the Bears can do that. So the Bears are probably going Williams, and then you get to Washington at number two. And I think this is where the draft pivots, because there's a lot of intrigue about who they're going to take and whomever, whichever quarterback they go with, that's going to probably set off a bit of a frenzy for some of those other guys. So if you're Washington at number two, I mean, you got Drake May, you got Jaden Daniels, you got J.J. McCarthy. That's probably the consensus. Out of those three, if you're Washington, who do you like?
If I had to pick a quarterback, I would take Jalen Daniels. But if I was the Commanders, I'm trading out the position. I can get a King's ransom for two. Yep. But if I had to pick a quarterback, I'm taking Jaden Daniels. I think between those three, he's the most pro-ready. The only thing that scares you about Jalen Daniels is that his size. Jalen Daniels is not a big guy. He's under 205 pounds. You know, but as far as accuracy, arm strength, being able to run, let's not forget he played in the SEC, and he's the only guy that threw for 4,000 yards and ran for 1,000-plus yards in the same season. That's never been heard of. I mean, there's been great quarterbacks in the SEC, and he's the first to do it. But can that transition to the NFL? Maybe, maybe not. But if I'm, man, I'm just being honest, Coach. If I'm the Commanders, and somebody like the Minnesota Vikings said, look, I'll give you 11, 23, my second round, my fourth round, or first next year, and maybe a third, oh, I'm out of there. I'm out of there, man. Let me get them picks, because I'm going to build the roster, and I can get maybe a guy like a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix maybe at 11.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you might see that. You might see somebody offer a King's ransom, because, you know, you got those the three teams at the top, New England at number three, and then you got 11, 12, 13. You know, Denver, Minnesota, Denver, and Vegas. And all those guys are said to be hot and heavy, you know, into the quarterback market. And you know, there aren't six first-round quarterbacks. No. So it's musical chairs, and somebody's gonna you know, get left without a chair. And what are they going to be willing to do to pay for a chair? That'll be really interesting to see. And that's why, again, this is why the draft is so great. This kind of intrigue is fascinating to people, and it'll set off a huge domino effect. So, all right, let me ask you this. We know the quarterbacks are going high because of need, but what if you were drafting on pro potential alone? Would Joe Alt be your guy as the number one overall pick, or is there somebody else? And we were just drafting on, you know, who's the best player in this draft?
I would go, if I went by straight talent versus need, I would go Joe Alt 1, Marvin Harrison Jr. 2, Blake Bowers 3, and probably 4 would be one of the quarterbacks. And I might go with Jaden Daniels over Caleb Williams if I had to go 1, 2, 3, 4 as far as players in the draft. Now, there's some other guys around that 6, 7, 8. Like, I love Roma Dusey. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Pittsburgh Steelers, some kind of way, if Rome drops past 8, if he gets past Atlanta and the Pittsburgh Steelers can figure it out, oh my goodness, go get him. Because Rome is a pro's pro. I've been saying it all along. I'm going to keep saying it. He's Hines Ward 2.0. He's bigger, faster, stronger. But his work ethic. If you get an opportunity, go back and watch the Pivot podcast where they interviewed him. And you hear his story about where he came through and all whatever else. Man, he sent chills up my spine. Because of, like, what I know with this kid. I know what's in this kid. And I'm like, oh, man, he's going to be a pro's pro. So I think Rome's close. He's like maybe 6. But, you know, those guys, man, they're pro ready. Day ones, I think at least 4 of them. Well, I even said this, Coach. I think 8 to 10 kids could wear a yellow jacket in this draft. Because, you know, there's always 3 or 4 that you don't see. But I think right off the bat, 8 to 10, they're yellow jackets, man. They're Hall of Fame guys. It's just a matter of time, being in the right place and putting the work ethic that they did at the collegiate level in at the pros.
Interesting. Yeah, it is. It's fascinating when you talk about talent versus need. And you look at recent drafts. You go 2 years ago, the Jaguars make Travion Walker the number one pick in the draft. Clearly not the best player in the draft. Mm-hmm. Or you go a few years back, the Chiefs take Eric Fisher, number one overall, right? You know, again, not the best player in the draft, but they those teams prioritize need. I mean, think about how much better Joe Alt is than Eric Fisher. No disrespect to Eric Fisher, but Joe Alt is going to wind up being a much better pro, and he's probably going to go 5, 6 picks later simply because of the way that teams now prioritize the quarterback position. And that's fascinating because quarterbacks picked in the top 10 over the last 10 years, they are not, by any stretch of the imagination, slam dunks. I mean, the Ringer did a study where they basically said, I won't go into all their criteria, but they basically said about 40% of those QBs picked in the top 10 wash out. They don't become anything close to a franchise quarterback. So I always find it fascinating how teams make their evaluations when you've got the whole board basically to choose from. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're talking about the favorites, right? Let's talk about the opposite end. You got any sleeper picks that you really like? Who's a player maybe a little further down the board who isn't getting a whole lot of attention you think could be a really good pro?
First round, Barton, the kid out of Duke. The kid out of Duke, Barton, is the real deal, man. He's positionless. He could play center. He could play guard. You could flip it to the left or the right. You know, and versatility in the NFL game is big-time football. You know, and when you go back and look on the tape, not just the easy games he played like Miami Hurricanes or, you know, somebody like that. But when you see him against the Florida States, when you see him where he's actually got to play, NFL lineman on the Notre Dame side, and he's playing, you're looking at that kid like, man, this kid can play, man. You know, and so I love offensive lineman evaluation because I always like to see him in pass pro versus run scheme, right? And when you make guys disappear on pass pro, you know, we call that old school pancake blocking. You can't find him on the screen nowhere, the guy he was up against. So pass pro and run sets, oh, man, he kills people. So late first round, I like him. But a guy I like probably in the second or maybe even in the third, man, I love Chris Jenkins, man. Love Chris Jenkins. Defensive tackle out of the University of Michigan. Oh, my goodness, man. He's got a motor that don't stop. He's 300 pounds. He's about 6'3". He's super athletic. And in today's NFL, you don't necessarily need that one technique guy or you know, the tilting and slanting, he takes on two blockers. You need a defensive tackle that's athletic enough to get to the quarterback. And go back and put the tape on with Chris Jenkins, man. He listen, everybody's on Malik Murphy, the kid out of University of Texas. He's a good ball player, but there's no difference between Chris Jenkins and Malik Murphy. There's no difference. They're the same guy. Matter of fact, I think Jenkins is better. But he's probably going to slip to the second because he just didn't get the shine based on the rotation of defensive linemen that was going on at the University of Michigan.
Right. Nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a big film breakdown on Barton, and I focused on their game against Florida State because he's blocking Jared Verse and Braden mm-hmm. Fisk, who are mm-hmm. both going to be NFL starters. And he was great. He was great. Mm. We knew he was an athlete. I knew he was an athlete. You know, you see the combine, the RAS score and all that stuff. But mm. I didn't know that he had that nasty in him. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize he was a finisher. He's a to the echo of the whistle guy, man. He's blocking dudes and finishing with a shove and doing all those things that coaches love. So, yeah, he was a pleasure to watch. I'll give you a guy I really like, man. Further down the draft, maybe day three guy. But I really like the running back out of Clemson,
Will Shipley,
man. Yeah. He's got a little bit of an Austin Eckler vibe, about the same size. I just think that in the modern NFL, and you talked about position versatility, he's a guy you can line up in a backfield and you can hand him the ball, and he's strong enough to be able to run inside zone and that kind of stuff. You can put him in the slot. You can motion him wherever the heck you want to. He'll bloody his nose. He's tough. You know, he's a guy that, like, you can win with guys like that. And the teams, I think, that draft the best find guys like Shipley on day three and then you know, give prominent roles to them. You think about what the Chiefs did a couple years ago when they got Isaiah Pacheco in the sixth round, you know, and they just turned him into a workhorse by maximizing his strength and fitting him in the scheme properly. Man, that marriage of player to scheme fit is so important, like we were talking about earlier.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
All right, let's finish up with this, man, because we're getting long on time, so I'm going to wrap it up. So a lot, obviously, you know, it's an NFL show, but there's a lot of Steeler fans listening. So let's make a prediction. Okay, ready? Mm-hmm. So finish this sentence. With the 20th pick in the first round of the 2024 NFL draft, the Pittsburgh Steelers select
Amarius Mims, offensive tackle, University of Georgia.
All right.
I think he'll be there on the board at 20. And I believe that Mims has the second highest upside of any tackle in this draft. The issue is he hasn't played that long, you know, as far as being a starter. I mean, the guy that he sat behind for a while is starting the opposite tackle for the Steelers right now. So now when you go back and put on the tape, Mims looks actually better than Jones on tape for the University of Georgia. So I think the Steelers have to seal and get their either tackles taken care of or their corners taken care of. We know that center is a huge need. But you got to have center, you got to have tackles and corners. So I think at the end of the day, Mims will be there at number 20 for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love Mims. I worry that Cincinnati is going to take him two spots earlier. Mm-hmm. I will not at all be shocked if the Steelers take Barton, because we've heard a lot about you know, they really value his versatility, and they think that they can really translate him into the center position. He hasn't played there since he was a freshman back in 2020, but I think that they feel like they can get him up to speed quickly. I think if they did draft Barton, they would have to sign a free agent after the draft. I don't think that they want to try to convert Herbig or something along those lines. So you might see one of those free agents, or maybe you see Mason Cole come back, you know, just on a stopgap basis, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, Sean, man, I really appreciate your time. Great conversation. Mm-hmm. I love talking football with you, man. It's always entertaining, and we're really we're geeked up for this. I can't wait. I'm you know, my wife's like, you're like a child. You get so excited for this.
Yeah, hey, Coach, I promise you on my podcast tomorrow night on Pump Your Brakes with Shannon and Kevin, man, I might have my onesie on, man, on my Christmas tree out with my Christmas hat, because it's Christmas Eve, man. You know, it's like the night before the night before the night. So, you know, I'm hyped, man. You know, these next few days is going to be really, really great, at least in my household from a football standpoint.
Absolutely. Mm. Best sport on the planet, man. Best sport on the planet. Mm-hmm. All right, so episode 53 of the Call Sheet in the books, and when we come back for episode 54, boy, we're going to have a lot to talk about. So, for Sean Gurley, this is Kevin Smith. Hope everybody gets the Christmas presents that they want there on Thursday and over the weekend. Take care, everybody.